This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Tom Moodley. His new book, Vectors, Heroes, Villains, and Heartbreak on the Bridge of the U.S. Navy. And now we come to the most difficult moments, to my knowledge, the United States has ever lived through. The pandemic called COVID-19. It is the winter of 2020. Tom has been rewarded for all of his years of hard work with being the acting Secretary of the Navy in an unknown challenge of what do you do about a virus that we believe is dangerous, but we're not getting good information from the People's Republic of China. The important detail here are the people around Tom as acting Secretary. He has a great deal of power. He's a civilian. And that, in our understanding, means that you have a deal of authority with the uniforms. It's important to see who else he's serving with. The Secretary of Defense at this time is Mark Esper. Who is he, Tom, and where does he come from?
Mark Esper is a graduate of West Point, class of 86. He's a classmate, actually, of Secretary Mike Pompeo, both class of 86 guys from West Point. When I came to the Pentagon in this second time around, he was the Secretary of the Army. And he was selected to become the Secretary of Defense when the original selection that President Trump had selected, Secretary Shanahan, decided to withdraw his name from consideration. And so Secretary Esper was the next man up.
And Admiral Gilday, who is he? Where does he come from?
Mike Gilday is class of 85 from the Naval Academy. And it's the consistent theme. There are a lot of people around the Pentagon during my tenure who were either at West Point or at Annapolis the same time I was there as a midshipman. But Mike is class of 85, so he would have been a sophomore when I was a senior at the Naval Academy. He was the 10th Fleet Commander, which was the U.S. Naval Cyber Command. And he had been selected to be the CNO after Bill Moran, who was the Vice Chief of Naval Operations, had to withdraw his name from consideration due to a situation that had to do with him maintaining contact with a previous naval officer who had had some problems with sexual harassment.
And General Berger, who is he? Where does he come from?
General Berger was a previous three-star general, and he was selected from a rank of probably three or four very, very qualified lieutenant generals to be the commandant of the Marine Corps.
We're looking at the decision makers in uniform and out of uniform because what is about to happen, no one had an understanding. In January, February of 2020, to recover, there is information that something is awry in China. The fleet is deployed, and we go now to what Tom and his colleagues knew at the time, February, March period. What was your information about the scale of this, Tom? And what were you and your colleagues talking about doing?
Almost immediately into the beginning of this, we started having meetings with the senior leadership of the department to talk about COVID and what it might mean and developing procedures for how we can deal with an outbreak on ships or at installations. And then we were also called into action because as there were cruise ship members who were stranded off the coast of California that needed to be put into quarantine, and there really wasn't anywhere to put them.
That was the middle of February, very early.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes. And so they came to the Department of Defense to see if we could help. And of course, we were able to create some living space to use as quarantine for a couple of weeks for these people. But the effort to me was a complete mismatch with respect to the perspective scale of this. You know, it was fine. We were able to do it. But that was for like a few thousand people at the most. And this, obviously, the way this virus was starting to spread across I was particularly looking at Italy, as Italy really was spreading around Italy, and Italy's a society like ours. It's fairly open, and you know, people travel around, and I felt like there really was going to be, it was going to be very difficult for us to control the spread of this across the country. And if so, if they're going to come to the military looking for help, we really didn't have an answer at that particular time.
February 29th, my note says, is the first COVID death of an American citizen. So this is very early on. You have two hospital ships, Mercy and Comfort. You deployed them to where?
Well, it was interesting. It's an interesting story because at the beginning of, I believe it was in the beginning to early part of February, after I had first heard some information about what was happening in Wuhan, I asked the Navy if we could have these ships ready in case, you know, we needed to use them if this became a national emergency. And I was told that the Mercy was available, but the Comfort was going to be in maintenance for the next 6 to 9 months and wasn't going to be available. And that wasn't a very satisfying answer to me, but we sort of put it on hold. And then it became apparent as the virus started to spread that perhaps these ships could be used to help by bringing them into the biggest population centers where they could relieve the hospital system from some of the beds for mostly for trauma victims. Because they were, these hospital systems were being overwhelmed with COVID patients. So that was the plan. The Comfort was to go to New York City, which it did. And then the Mercy was to go from San Diego up to Los Angeles, to Long Beach.
March 5th, the USS Teddy Roosevelt makes a port call, an important political port call, geopolitical port call in Da Nang. March 14th, the Teddy Roosevelt at sea reports 39 crew members positive for COVID-19. March 27th, Friday, March 27th, the TR reaches Guam. What is the challenge for an aircraft carrier with COVID cases on board? What did you know then, Tom?
Well, the biggest challenge was how do we control this spread, and particularly if how do we control it if crew members are really getting sick and, you know, to the point where they're critical and need to be put into respirators and things like that, or ventilators. And we weren't really sure if that was going to happen. The problem with the carrier is you have about 4,500 people on it, and it's pretty contained. And the ventilation systems just pretty much pump air around the entire ship. So it's a difficult environment to try and control something like that. So what we thought we would do, and there were several different plans in place in terms of where to bring them, and that, you know, as we were all sort of learning on the fly on this, but the decision was made to send the ship to Guam and quickly get 6 sailors off, and then also establish a watch rotation so we could have the right skills off, make sure that they were clean of the virus, bring them back on, so that we get the ship back out to sea and on station as quickly as possible.
The events tumble. For example, there is a CNN call that a member of Tom Moodley's staff is ill with COVID-19. That is not confirmed, but in any event, phone calls are flying back and forth. Your staff is working very hard to get in charge of this. And then the surprise. I said the TR reached Guam on the 27th. On the 29th, Sunday, I believe, the San Francisco Chronicle publishes a letter from the captain of the TR. What does the letter say?
Well, just to reset the time frame. So on Sunday, the ship got there on the 27th, and on Sunday, and on that Friday, I believe I told Bob Love, my chief of staff, that I really think it would be good for us to go to Guam and make sure that they were getting everything they needed on shore to facilitate this and make sure they understood that Washington sort of had their back on this whole thing. The governor of Guam had been in my office about 2 weeks prior to that, and I felt I had a good relationship with her and could go talk to her about how she might be able to assist in the efforts. And so Bob reached out to the captain, the commanding officer of the ship on that Sunday, and told him of our interest in coming. And he suggested that we don't come. He felt like it would be a distraction at that particular time. And then the best we can piece together the time frame, a few hours later, he sent out a letter that he sent over unsecured channels. And it was addressed only to naval aviators. It bypassed his direct fleet commander, the 7th Fleet Commander, Admiral Bill Merz. and just basically painted a very dire set of circumstances on shore, and sort of gave the impression that people weren't listening or paying attention, which couldn't have been farther from the truth. On Guam, they had mobilized like 900 people to develop this very, very sophisticated process to get the sailors off, to feed them, et cetera. They were working on securing hotel rooms at the 4- and 5-star hotels in Guam with the governor. And then this letter somehow, and I still don't know to this day, and I asked Captain Crozier about this later. We don't know how it got leaked, but it got leaked because it was not sent over secure channels. So once you send something like that over non-secure channels, it's available for everybody. And I believe there was a sense of panic on the ship, and maybe somebody who got it or forwarded it to somebody else, and then it made its way to the San Francisco Chronicle. And as we were flying out to greet the Mercy on its way from from San Diego to Los Angeles, this letter hit the news. This was on Tuesday. This letter hit the news, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I was just surprised, and I called Bob and said, "Didn't you just talk to the captain?" And he said he had, and he also had talked to him a couple of days later and said everything sounded fine. So it just took us all by surprise, and I knew that the environment at that moment had changed, and this was going to be a profound event.
Meetings in the Pentagon all week. All the major officers' names we know, General Milley, Admiral Gilday, Secretary Asper, everybody's involved. They're all consulting with each other. And all of this to be unpacked, but I want, Tom, for you to recall for us now, your decision to go to the TR and speak to the crew after the captain had been relieved.
Yes, well, I relieved the captain on Thursday, and that was basically after a conversation I had with the strike group commander, who was a rear admiral on the ship. And I asked him point blank, had the captain talked to him about this letter? And he said that he hadn't, that he saw it when it turned up in his inbox. And I said, "Did you challenge him on this?" And he said he did. And that the captain responded that the reason he did not talk to him about it in advance was because he knew that the strike group commander would not allow that communication to go out from the ship. And so at that moment, I realized he was intentionally and premeditatively insubordinate to his commander. And I decided that he was just not making good decisions. The ship was in a crisis, and we needed to have a steadier hand on board the ship. So that's what happened there. But what I didn't, and I announced this in a press conference, and I completely underestimated the public reaction to this. And it became very, very ugly in a lot of different ways for me. And on Friday, we found out that the captain had COVID. So he was now an even more sympathetic figure to those of whom had sympathy for him. And then he left the ship to a rousing pep rally that was broadcast or sent to NBC News and, you know, was broadcast all over the place. And no one was socially separated, no one wearing masks. And so I came to the decision that I needed to go to Guam for a couple of reasons. One was I just needed to talk to the crew and help them understand the reasons why I relieved their CO and what their mission was and duty. And then I also felt like I needed to make sure that everything that I had been saying about what was going on shore to take care of them was actually happening.
The book is Vectors, Heroes, Villains, and Heartbreak on the Bridge of the U.S. Navy. Tom Moodley is the author. When we come back, Tom Moodley addresses the crew of the Teddy Roosevelt in the days when we knew very little about the dimensions and the risk of the pandemic. But America was frightened. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.